Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson, joined as always by Kevin Zerman. Hello, Kevin. How are you?
I'm doing well, sir.
Liar. Absolute liar. I don't feel too great to answer the question myself. A portion of that has to do with what we're currently seeing unfold in the NBA, which we'll kind of get right into it, which is COVID is kind of spreading through the league. Is that accurate to say, Kevin? We're starting to see it really kind of disperse. I think the way I wrote it in a story yesterday was that we're approaching the point where there are more teams than not that either have a player out due to health and safety protocols, a positive test, what have you. And this directly involves the Suns. And we haven't podcasted for now. It's been 8 days, so we pretty much missed the... It felt like this really started to kick off about 4 to 5 days ago where we started seeing these positive tests, but I'll allow Fred Katz of the Athletics to kind of explain the chain of events that involved the Wizards. So the Wizards played the Nets, and then right after that, Kevin Durant had to go into quarantine. The 76ers had a positive test the day after playing the Wizards. The Celtics had a positive test the day after playing the Wizards, and now the Celtics can't play games. They've had, I think, like 2 or 3 straight games canceled. And then the Heat have had half of their roster pretty much sitting out after playing the Wizards. The Suns played the Wizards last night. There was this really strange thing, and I think we'll get into this, but I thought I had like a pretty loose understanding from the bubble and like the protocols and trying to understand what they were heading into the season. But we kind of learned that there is a lot of...
There weren't many...
That's a great way of putting it, just to kind of say it for what it is, but also that they have very loose definitions, I believe, because this weird thing happened where Bradley Beal was supposed to go into quarantine, it said he had to go to quarantine, but he was on the health and safety protocols list on Saturday. And what the health and safety protocols means is you're on there for COVID related reasons. That could either be a contact tracing issue or a,
you got it.
Or you have coronavirus. I thought that it was a 7-day minimum for contact tracing and a certain amount of negative tests required. And then I thought that it was at least a 12-day minimum and a certain amount of negative tests required if you got it. I don't think that's the case because Beal was placed on the list Saturday and then he played on Monday. And I believe the reason that they said that Beal was being placed on the list is because they got video of him post game dapping up with Jason Tatum, who obviously has coronavirus. We learned through these couple of days as well, as people started to sift through this 150 page thing, that the NBA is not accounting for in-game transmission. That is problematic in a lot of ways. Haley O'Shaughnessy, who used to write for The Ringer and has a podcast, NBA podcast coming soon, just basically put it like this is an analytics driven league. We've seen them really just believe in so many types of numbers and specific numbers at that. And for them to be that ahead of the curve on analytics and things like that, but not believe in in-game transmission, is troubling. Beal, to finish my point, Beal goes on to play Monday. The Wizards cancel against the Suns. The Wizards cancel practice on Tuesday morning because they have two more players go into health and safety protocol. So again, we don't know if that's contact tracing. We don't know if that's inconclusive test. We don't know if that's because of a positive test. And then the Suns had a pro day that they scheduled late last night when they got back to Phoenix. They scheduled a pro day for the next day, which just means guys come in and do what they need to do, whether that's get treatment done, go to the weight room, get shots up, whatever they have planned for their own day. They had that scheduled. They canceled it. It sounds like a mess, Kevin, because it is, right?
Okay, so you can look at the NBA didn't plan for this to happen because – I think Mark Stein was the first to point it out that I saw that they didn't talk go seriously down a road of maybe we need a taxi squad of like five guys, just if we want to just play through this, right? If you want to be over precautionary and contact trace very strictly, like you dap someone up who got it or who's on a contact tracing list, then you're now on that list. Like that's, you know, being safe is good. But they didn't prepare the rosters to be safe with expanding them, basically. That's one problem. And then now, as we're seeing today, they met the MBPA and the league met and put forth a lot of strict protocols, but some of them are not that strict. Like they're not allowed to have guests in the hotel room on the road, which wasn't a rule until this morning. So they were being really cautious about the tracing and calling guys out, but they weren't cautious at all about the rules. Like the NFL from day one were wearing things around their neck that would ring and be annoying in your ear if you were within 6 feet for 5 or 10 seconds of someone else who's wearing those devices also. Like that was to the extent of like they were not messing around. They had tiers of, okay, you're in this tier, you're a player, you're tier one. If you're like a medium personnel guy for the Cardinals, you'd be like tier two or tier three. Like the NBA didn't have any of that. So now we're in this world where it's like 10 times worse or whatever the numbers are. It's a lot worse right now. And they didn't have rules and they didn't have the rosters set up. So they're just like, we knew there would be bumps in the road, but the bumps in this case look like a little like they didn't plan to me.
The biggest thing that I didn't account for personally was I was influenced a bit by the NFL getting through it and uncertain parts getting through it. What the NFL has, Kevin, and you know this because you covered an entire Cardinal season, they have a week. The Suns will, these teams will play the next day or in 2 days. And because of this compact schedule, there's a lot of just game off day, game off day, game off day. And one of the biggest problems right now is that even if they have access to this rapid testing, there is not an immediate, like if you have coronavirus, Kevin, and you breathe on me and that is how I got coronavirus, it's not going to pop up on a test 15 minutes after you breathe on me. You get what I'm saying? It's going to take a while for it to come up. So it's going to take a while for it to come up on tests, and the NFL was had a huge benefit of having those couple of days for it, for that transmission process or whatever you want to call it. But this is kind of how it can get weird, because in some of those instances where like the Tatum thing, it was like, does he have it? He has it. Okay, he had another positive test. There's a process that has to go on for a positive test to come through when someone has it, and then have a second positive test and so on. Right, Kevin?
Yeah, I mean, in the NFL, it would lag, you know, over the course of a week where they would think, okay, we got all rid of them. And then there'd be one a day for the next 5 days. That's all linked. And again, the Wizards played the three teams that are being most affected by this right now so far in a row before playing Phoenix. So we might not know for another week whether the Suns are going to actually be affected in a big way, you know? So you just don't know. And I will go back to the point, because you brought it up about like the NBA hasn't really accounted for teams playing one another. The first case of coronavirus, basically that one was a big deal in the United States. Maybe Tom Hanks was first, was Rudy Gobert. And he played Christian Wood, and Christian Wood also got it. And was there another?
Like right after. Yeah, it was like the next big test in the NBA that got confirmed was Christian Wood.
So
yeah.
Like there was the first case, like probably gave it to someone. Like we aren't sure. We probably don't know for sure, but that probably, you know, so or Christian Wood gave it to him. I don't know. So
was it? I think it was Tim Cato from The Athletic wrote the extensive piece about how the league isn't accounting for in-game transmission, despite, because that's through the CDC, the Center for Disease Control. That's per their recommendations or per their research, whatever it was specifically. He wrote the full story. You can go check it out. But he spoke with infectious disease experts like outside the CDC, and they were like, oh no, it can like they should account for in-game transmission. So it's
of all sports,
that's how it can spiral though, right?
Yeah, like of all sports, like football, I could actually see, you know, baseball center fielder's not going to get a standing in center field football. You tackle someone, you might breathe on him once. But like the NBA, where you're matched up against a dude who might be breathing on you a whole, you know, most of your game, that's how it spreads, is time and close proximity. That adds up. So I am concerned, because obviously these guys are giving it to each other in games, it seems like.
We'll see what the league's official number is. I wrote this in a story yesterday because Monty Williams was asked a lot of questions. David Aldridge from The Athletic asked him a really good question, just flat out asking, like, do you feel safe playing right now? And he heavily sighed, and then he laughed, Monty did. And then he said he did because of all the protocols they have in place, which is a timely thing to bring up today. Because as you mentioned, Shaum Charania, Adrian Wojnarowski, all the top guys are reporting right now that essentially what is happening for the next 2 weeks is that there are going to be in-market bubble rules that are in effect. You'll remember that there were approved places for guys to leave the hotel. They're not they're allowed to leave the hotel anymore. There's like all these like minute things that people are making fun of right now. Like there are no more like elongated handshakes, only do fist bumps and elbow bumps now when you like meet someone or whatever. Players have to have a mask on at all times except when they're on the court now. There's a lot of different things like that, and it was interesting to hear Monty say, I think one thing that they need to do, and I mentioned on this podcast earlier that they're blaring music in the arena because they don't want us to hear what's on the court, but Monty said yesterday the players can't hear him when he has the mask on. And I just think they need to like cut off all the sound so everyone can hear each other easier. And again, to go back to Haley, she tweeted out something, some info today that like suggests that actually being, this is like much more of like a COVID discussion, this particular part, but she was basically saying that like things like yelling, just being quieter is something that really helps with the stuff in terms of transmission. So obviously it does not help that coaches are just taking their mask off for a second to yell something because they can't hear. And then the habit that needs to go away, obviously, is when they remove their mask to have a conversation with someone 5 feet away from them. Like that has to stop. But Monty was saying like, I'm lifting my mask down because like, they can't hear me. They just straight up can't hear me across the court, and I need to be able to communicate with them like I would normally. So that now is probably going to change. It sounds like they're just going to have their mask on all the time, man. To kind of go back to like the very opening of the podcast, I'm not sure. This feels like the league is really, they tried to give players a little bit less of, they tried to lessen the impact of like what the bubble had in terms of restrictions and stuff, just for the sake of like mental health. And of course them just feeling more at ease about everything. But now they gave them their shot, and I don't want to say they blew it. That's not fair at all. And Monty said yesterday, like, no one's trying to do this on purpose, obviously. But any room for, and this is the wrong way to paint it because shouldn't be viewed at this way, but any wiggle room that they had right now is pretty much gone because of how it's spreading around the league right now. But as I was saying before I close with what I'm getting at, is last update the league had was 4 positive tests over the week span. They're releasing weekly updates on how many people test positive, and the last one was 4 guys. So I'm really interested to see what that number is. I believe that next number is going to come out in the next couple of days. They update it by week. It's going to be pretty high, Kevin.
I would say so. And again, the Suns, I mean, Jalen Smith was on health and safety protocols list too, right? So he wasn't even involved in this, really. But yeah, it's going to be a test these next 2 weeks, because they have to just at least control what's happened so far. And, you know, if they put these rules in place, they do look like good rules. So maybe that will really kind of limit exposure if guys follow them. But, you know, I feel like the NBA, that's tough. Like football, I can see guys, like, that's their mentality, where it's, I go to the facility, I go home, I play video games or whatever. Like James Harden has his strip clubs to go to, you know.
And this Kyrie thing, yeah, today he was like at a mask
birthday
party.
He was
maskless at a birthday party or something. It's like, yeah, there has to be a fine balance between, you're out of the bubble now and you're allowed to like go places every now and then and still treating it like we're in the middle of a pandemic, which I mean, we can now go on to commentary as a whole about COVID. And again, like we didn't want this whole thing to be about COVID. We're going to talk about the basketball games. So let's do that, Kevin. We missed four games, the Toronto win, which was a weird one. I don't think we'll get into that much. We'll talk about the road trip here. Three games in 4 days. They played a very bad Pistons team, lost to them in overtime. They beat a tremendous Indiana team, and Indiana, I thought, played really well in that game, too. That was the win of the season. That was the second game of a back-to-back. And then they played last night. We're recording this Tuesday afternoon. They played last night in Washington, got absolutely the doors blown off of them. And the story in pretty much all of these games, and I will say pretty much because the Indiana game, they had 33 assists and only three turnovers. Mikal scored 34. I believe he had 15 in the first 7 or 8 minutes. And I know it's not fair to just take out one player's performance, but Mikal did a lot of lifting in that game to help them to that total. But even taking the Indiana game into consideration, the offense and particularly the starting five has been an issue. We have been talking about it since the preseason. And I think in last week's episode, we were talking about what we thought potentially was going on. We were basically in here are problems, but they seem like they'll be fine. And it's just the start of the season. It might take 20 games as opposed to 10 or whatever. But when you get beat that thoroughly by a team as poor as the Wizards, it starts different conversations and it just leads to Book saying that it's obvious and evident. Those are the two words that he used after the game to say that the starters aren't playing well. And he admitted, and I don't know if I would have even said this personally, but he said we've been carried by the bench in a lot of our wins. Monty said that there's like a thought process. The thought process has begun essentially for making a change to the starting lineup. And what I mean by that is, he's now going to really take a look at things, see if a discussion, he thinks a discussion needs to take place. Then there's a discussion. What changes could we potentially make? And then if a change occurs. Man, we can start a lot of different places, but just Kevin, overall, what have you been seeing from the team the past couple of games and just what they've been struggling with? Same kind of stuff?
Yeah, I think the Wizards game was kind of blown out just because the defense wasn't there, and that, you know, yeah, that's concerning, but maybe you can say that happens. Like, there was a play in the first quarter where Cam Johnson and Chris Paul just didn't know whether they were switching or not, and that stuff's like, this team's not there mentally is what that said to me. So looking past that though, like the offensive issues, like you said, have been kind of percolating, if that's the right word. And really, like, it starts for me with they don't have a guy other than Book who's going to be driving to the rim. They've been playing at a slow pace, so it's not coming in transition. Chris Paul's going to pull up in mid-ranges. Book's going to pull up on mid-ranges. Mikal's a cutter, but it really hasn't been as frequent as we used to see. And Jay Crowder, just he's a spot-up shooter. So I just think – I'm not saying that – like, they shouldn't trade for Chris Paul, but you miss a player like Kelly Oubre who's capable of just breaking down a guy off a dribble, right? Like, and has that athleticism to get to the rim. I think that matters a lot. And, of course, where we're going with that is they're not getting paint opportunities. They're not drawing a lot of fouls. I haven't looked up the numbers, but they weren't earlier. And ultimately, that points to DeAndre Ayton taking a lot of blame. And it's not just him, but he's taking a lot of blame because he's the guy who, in theory, should be the rim roller, should be putting pressure on the rim. And that just opens up everything else. So I think they have to start there. And whether that's like purposely giving him post touches, Dario doing a lot more, working out of the post, I don't see a super great answer here as far as like who's going to be that guy who can really just put pressure on the rim. Like, you know, like Russell Westbrook's the best example as a perimeter player, but they just don't have that guy.
They are 25th in free throw rate right now. And I think the I'm trying to think of how to phrase this. I think, okay, so here's the bottom line. So Chris Paul has stopped like shooting at the rim for the past like almost decade. On cleaning the glass right now, the percentage of his attempts that are at the rim. Here are his last five seasons before Phoenix. 9%, 11, 11, 9, 16. And then it goes 12, 17. And then he was in the 20s for about 7 or 8 years to start his career. He has never been that guy to take shots at the rim. But the reason this doesn't nuke an offense and why the offense is still so amazing is because of his elite efficiency in the mid-range. He's taking 65% of his shots in the mid-range right now, which is pretty much the number one mark right now for a point guard. He was at 59% last year, which was also in the 100th percentile for cleaning the glass. He's always been that guy because he's just elite efficiency from there. But also, he doesn't get to the rim because once he gets in the paint, he's dumping it off to somebody or making the right pass. And the problem is he's dumping it off to DeAndre, and DeAndre is playing with a level of indecisiveness I don't even know if we've seen from him before. And that's pretty staggering to say, because obviously indecisiveness is a huge problem with him and always has been. Everyone knows the examples, and just he has these catches where you raise your hand watching the TV and you're just kind of like, what are you doing? It's one of those types of things. And I just say that to point out the example, right? And just so people listening understand what I'm saying, he's always had those possessions. It got to the point where in like the Clippers game, I brought up that possession where he had four guys around him and he shot it. You'll see these screenshots. And I think I shared one of those on Twitter, that exact one. And I'm putting it up there just to show, like, he shot this. This is really great. And for other people, that just might look like a standard regular possession. It's not a standard regular possession for him. And the dunk numbers are way down for him, and that is very evident, because even if he's never been a guy who absolutely dunks everything, that just is indicative of how much he's finishing around the rim and how much he's getting those looks around the rim, and he's not. And we can say it's on him. We can say it's not on him, whatever. I think that he has played terrific in two games. I think in the other nine games, he's been kind of whatever. And I think the way that we've described it on this podcast, way I've been describing in other places, that he's been fine. And the thing is, he can be fine as long as they are winning. But once they start losing, it is going to, the weight of his performances are going to fall on the team a lot more. I wrote this in the recap last night, and I'm going to completely agree with everyone and say, this is in no way entirely on him, nor would I even say that he is the number one reason that the starting five is having these inefficiencies. If I had to guess at one at the top, though, what was at the top, I really would guess him, because I was going to go into this podcast this week. I think I decided, like, after the Pacers game and watching some of the possessions that Chris Paul had with him in the first quarter, my thought in my head was like, man, Chris Paul is willing to lose games to build chemistry with him right now. That's the thought that I had in my head. I don't know if I truly believe that or if that's fact or whatever. Obviously, it's just a thought that popped into my head, seeing him not only not attack a possession with as much aggression as it required, but doing so to get him the ball and to get him the ball in the right spots. And there was, of course, the possession last night where the ball went right over DeAndre's head and Chris Paul kind of looked away. Him and Jay didn't get back in defense on defense and transition. DeAndre started the game 0-3 last night. He was 1 of 6 to start the game. It's very problematic, because that's what he's here for. When I talked to Willie Green about Chris, he said Chris understands how much he needs DeAndre, and like, DeAndre needs Chris as much as Chris needs DeAndre. I think that's the thing we got lost in, is how much Chris is going to help DeAndre. It's like, well, Chris is going to need him. Like, it's a requirement for this team to get where Chris wants it to go for him to get the most out of Ayton. And he's getting, I don't want to say the bare minimum, but it feels like pretty close to it right now, because his offensive impact is just very, it's very startling right now to see it. And I don't know what the fix is, because I don't think they should bench him, Kevin. I don't think he should go on the bench. Even if they had if this was a Rashawn Holmes scenario where you had someone like Rashawn Holmes behind him who fit a little bit better than Dario for the center position, I'm not even sure if I would say moving Ayton to the bench is the right move for his development anyway. But are the Suns in a position right now where they are willing to, I don't want to say lose games, but they are willing to see if DeAndre can work through this for the next 15 to 20 games before ultimately moving him to the bench? Because he's been the worst player of those five, right? Like, that, I can say that out loud. Is that okay? Would you agree? Fourth or fifth? He's not. He has not been better than Mikal, Chris, or Devin. It's not close.
I mean, I don't think Jay Crowder's been especially great either, to be honest. Yeah. But with Aiden, to me, I'm really like, how many possessions, how many touches do you want him to have? And then how many are actually available? And then, cause like the thing is, he's going to have those one or two where he just doesn't attack or passes out when he's open. But if you throw those one or two out, how many times is the defense responsible for just making sure he's covered? How many times does the ball not get to him even when he carves out a bunch of space? Because like, I see him work a lot of times to like post up, down low, run back, post
seal.
Up. He just seals and then he just never sees the ball.
Yeah.
And people don't point that out enough where he puts in all this effort and gets that like nothing out of it. And to me, there is a balance of like, I need to watch more because I don't want to go on the record and say I know this, but I feel like this team is also not doing a great job of getting him the ball when it could, or it's not good doing a good job of swinging it to the other side when defenses are collapsing. Because also, like in general, teams are really just packing the paint against the Suns.
Yeah, I want to preface just quickly because you understand completely what I'm saying and what I wrote last night and what I was trying to get at and what I was just talking about there for a couple of minutes. The problem is that Chris's number one role offensively right now appears to be getting DeAndre in the ball and maximizing DeAndre. And when Chris Paul, an elite offensive player, a top 15, 20 player in the league right now, his number one impact on the floor right now is trying to get someone the ball who is not playing well right now. That is enough to crater an offense. That is what I'm saying. I'm not saying that DeAndre is the number one reason. I'm saying DeAndre by proxy, because I think if he was just, I don't know if it's running less around him, but I think if just Paul had a little bit better of a flow with him in terms of, I don't know if this is fair, Kevin, but in terms of like figuring out like, okay, he doesn't have it tonight, I just have to get away from, like, not get away from him, but run less through him. I don't know if it's that. I don't know what the fix is there, but that is the problem to me, because Chris Paul has always been a guy who takes like 11, 12, 13 shots a game. I understand he's only like a 15 point per game score. I'm not saying he needs to score 20, 25 a game. It is the handful of possessions, especially in the first quarter, that are just nuked essentially because he's not taking advantage of where the defense goes. Because to get to what you were saying and let you continue, there are possessions where DeAndre is drawing the gravity and Chris isn't taking advantage because he just wants to get DeAndre the ball so bad. It's not an easy fix. And I think the rhythm of that is just messing with the flow of the offense. And obviously that's going to affect a lot of other people, including Book in my opinion. I think that he's going through his own rhythm issues, but it's not helping. That is just not helping a group that already had familiarity things to clearly that they had to work out already.
Yeah. And again, I don't know if it's like something to jump off a ledge about. Like, again, they still have a good record because they knew they're going to work through this. And I think last podcast we talked about, what did Chris say about just like getting these wins or piling up wins right now, something like that? Like they know that they're going to have these, which is good because I think that's going to help Book not panic that he's not had a crazy great run so far. And that's why Chris is doing what he's doing. Cause I think they're just trying to figure each other out still. And the bench again allowed them to do that, but we're starting to see where teams kind of figured out how to stop that too, where they are just like, okay, if you're going to beat us, you can just shoot a lot of threes. And sometimes it won't be their night. So they're going to have to adjust to this. And we're kind of at that point where it's like, okay, we got 3-4 games here where Monty's going to have to adjust, make some tweaks, whether that's scheme or lineup changes, we'll see, but that's kind of how this goes. Once people get you, then you got to adjust to it.
There's Montrez potential with Dario too. We saw it in the Clippers game, right? Where they were just like, okay, we're just going to run pick and roll on him every single time down the court. It's like, uh-oh, don't do that.
Switch.
Yeah, exactly. And I was curious in the Indiana game. Indiana didn't really just have the ball handlers to do it. And like these limited teams, Detroit and Washington don't. But Atlanta, for example, I don't know if Rondo's back. I don't know what their ball handler situation is. But if they have Trey and Rondo running it for all 48, that's another one where you could see that. And that's a very good point, because how teams are adjusting to them and how they adjust to those adjustments while they need to make their own adjustments on their own to what wasn't working in the first 5 to 10 games at all, is not a good trend right now, to say the least. But I agree. I think there's, let's be honest, like the metagame, the inside baseball stuff here, like we saw how everyone jumped off the cliff, like you said, when DeAndre had the bad game against Sacramento. And it just feels like every time he plays like crap now in a game that they lose, it feels like that's just going to be the reaction. So it was just the perfect storm. But the starting lineup thing is just Chris, Devin, Mikel, like they can't leave. They stay in there. I believe that Jay needs to stay. I feel like just team defense and 0.5, he's actually the best option available of the three potentially you could go with, and that's Dario and Cam Johnson. And then DeAndre, it's just such a drastic drop off from Dario, because Dario is not offering rim protection. He is not offering rebounding. You're getting just a completely different skill set. And this is already a team that's playing small at the four as it is in terms of rebounding drop off. So I don't think they can, I don't think that they should bail on this starting five, even if this trend continues for the next couple of games. And I don't think they really can, to be honest. It sucks, because I think the change that makes the most sense, Kevin, is probably Mikel coming out for Cam, stylistically. That's the only thing I'm saying is like stylistically, but I thought that, and then I looked at the Chris Paul shooting numbers, and especially in the first quarter's field goal attempts, Mikel takes the second most shots in the first quarter right now. It's actually been a pretty important part of the offense to get him involved early, and it's been helping a lot in these games, especially the Indiana game. So I don't know if there's any other quick fix. I'm just looking at, I think the defensive drop off is something that we should not let go unnoticed, because if they regress from being a top five, top 10 defense while this stuff is happening, that's where it turns into issues, because Books said we didn't play our game, we played their game and we paid for it. And then Monty said it simply, like, if we stop moving the ball, playing hard, and those all sound like cliche narrative stuffs, and that's like the conversation we have on here all the time, and something I bring up is that it's weird because a lot of the things that this team does well are just cliches. Like, they do play really hard, they do share the ball a lot, they just need to get back to that and they'll be okay. But that's the main thing to do, like, do they stick to playing the way that they play? That's where you start to see the similarities between the 7-4 start, and then of course if they have any health and safety protocol issues after this Washington game, it could be pretty horrible timing if it turns out to be something from there. We'll have to see. They play Atlanta on Wednesday, Golden State on Friday, and Indiana on Saturday. And if you stop paying attention to Golden State after the first couple games of the season, they got Draymond back, which seemed to help Steph and seemed to help them as well. Oubre and Wiggins, especially Oubre, are still having a really rough time. But Steph and Draymond and Wiseman looks legit. So they're a test. Those are three tough games. And it's good timing, I think, at least. Is there anything else, Kevin, from like the past week that you want to talk about? Three-point shooting numbers are what they are. I think it's a really good point that you bring up, dribble penetration. And just Monday, it was really noticeable, huh, how much they were settling for jumpers.
And no campaign. So that's really just kind of put more on Book, and it's been a problem. So I think... yeah, I mean, that's why campaign's so important to this team, is just they don't have off the dribble attacking guards, wings, forwards, and they have a big hole where they don't have any options after DeAndre. If you're saying, okay, well, someone could replace him, like Dario's just a completely different player and they have no choice. So I think that's when you look at roster construction, a few holes that are sticking out right now, but then again, they're still a good defensive team and they're hanging in. So I think they just got to keep on this with like figuring out what they have to do. I'm with you. I don't think they can panic really. Like, my pick would be Cam Johnson. swapped in for Crowder, but then Crowder does not fit at all with that second unit. So you kind of blow that up. Yeah, there's just not a lot of pieces that can move around right now.
I think the formula for success right now in the short term is the Toronto game. Just looking at Gambo tweet about DeAndre Ayton right now and saying the key for him is rebounding, that made me think of the Toronto game where DeAndre had 11 and 16. And I didn't think he was particularly good in that game. But if you get enough offense and he's just grabbing every rebound and finishing around the rim, he was 6 of 8 in that game, only took 8 shots. That was when Booker had 24 and 6. Chris Paul had 12. That was 7 guys in double figures. That was when Jay Crowder shot 6 of 8 from 3. Cam hit 4 threes, but of course that was the game where Cam Payne had 10 assists in 16 minutes. When you can just have stabilizing and hitting shots from the starters and then get to that second unit where Cam Payne really changes the game, that's the formula for them right now. I just got to say it. Until their starters figure it out, it's more of just – I don't want to say the starters doing enough, but the starters at least holding their own until Payne and those guys can get in there and kind of change the game. And I agree with you. Do you think that should be taken into consideration too before we go? Is changing the starting lineup for the sake of the second unit and messing up what's working so on the second unit? Because if you look at the net ratings overall for this team right now, campaigns at a 24.7, which is ridiculous, but right after him, Dario 19.0 and Cameron Johnson 13.2, Langston Galloway 11.8. They are destroying teams while the second unit or while the starters have been pretty meh. The only real bad number net rating wise is DeAndre. He's at a -7.1. Jay Crowder's at a -2.9. Chris Paul -2.6. Book is at a 2.9 positive. I would be scared about messing up the second unit, Kevin, if I'm being honest.
That's why they are where they are. I mean, if you're going to bet on someone, bet on Book and Chris Paul getting things right and work with DA. Crowder and Mikal obviously are going to be what they are. I think obviously Mikal is in a really good spot. So I don't see many options here, man.
You imagine, just start the reserves. They just start next game.
That would be a fun message sent by Monty. Yeah, I would enjoy that. To be fair,
I would enjoy that, especially like in against a team like Atlanta, where it would just be so that like opening 6 minutes would be the most chaotic nonsense ever. Okay, well, Kevin, I hope I'm wrong, but I think things are going to be drastically different the next time we record this. Podcast. We'll be back sometime next week. Suns have 3 home games until then that we will come back to you and report about. And we've got, I believe they play Memphis on Martin Luther King Day on Monday as well. So four fun games for us to come back and talk about next time. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.